When autumn comes, most people are sitting by the fireside, watching their televisions. But I've just met a gentleman who's decided to do otherwise. His name is Xenophon Kelsey, and he's walking from John O'Groats to Land's End, and I want to find out why. So, Zen, John O'Groats to Land's End, was that a lifelong ambition?
It's just something I've always wanted to do. I've walked most of the long-distance footpaths in the UK and quite a bit abroad. But it's just, you know, for years I've always wanted to set up this idea of doing John O'Groats to Land's End. I supported a bike ride doing it about 25 years ago and drove the vehicle for them and sort of swore then I was going to walk it, I wasn't going to cycle it. But it was then a case of finding an excuse to do it and a reason for doing it and time to do it. So it's taken until now to organise it.
Right, we come across to the excuse for doing it. Not only is it something you've always wanted to do, but you're doing it with a real sense of purpose. So tell me more about the project.
Well, the project is sort of twofold. I'm raising funds for two musical charities that I'm involved with. One is the Vacation Chamber Orchestras, which is a student orchestra that meets every vacation, hence the name. And the other one is the St. Cecilia Orchestra in Ripon. So we've got two musical charities that we're raising money for. But at the same time, I'm trying to meet as many musicians as I can along the way and go and visit musical organisations and do as much research as I can, particularly into musical education or music education, because there's a tremendous amount going on, or not going on as the case may be, throughout the UK in music education. So I'm trying to do some research, and at the end of the day I'll produce a report for the government and for the Arts Council, who are now administering music education budgets and so on. So there's quite a lot of work behind the scenes involved in producing that report as well.
How were you first introduced to the world of music?
Parents were both very keen amateurs. Father played everything, taught quite a few instruments, and mother sang and played the viola. So I just grew up in a family with music and then went on to study at college and become a professional musician. I studied in Manchester at the old Northern School, and then I was sort of involved on the staff of the Northern School, and then they amalgamated with the Manchester, became the Royal Northern College. So that was my background. Then I worked in Manchester for 20-odd years.
Obviously, you got a specialist instrument or a speciality within the classical music field and maybe beyond. So what are these?
My first instrument when I went to college was horn, French horn, but I always wanted to conduct. And then I did piano, we have to do as a second study, and I also played double bass, because I thought, as a conductor, you need to know something about string playing, and the best-looking girl in the school orchestra was in the double bass section, so that was an obvious choice. And then one of the problems with playing the horn is if you don't keep playing it almost every day, it very quickly goes. And so as soon as I got doing more and more conducting and this sort of stuff, I couldn't keep the horn playing up, so that went. But I worked on the double bass, so I now play that professionally as well.
What sort of orchestras and groups were you conducting in the beginning?
Mainly amateur orchestras, and then I got into youth orchestras. I got the job as director of Stockport Youth Orchestra, which I spent about 13 years there and built it up into one of the best orchestras in the whole of the North. And from then on, I've worked mainly with youth orchestras and the students.
We do a lot of youth work on Tent Radio. We do youth training for radio presenters. It is one of the most rewarding things that you can do, is to pass on your skills and also to open people's eyes to the realisation that they can do these things.
Absolutely, and it keeps us young as well. I mean, Jane and myself, we're working non-stop with students. We have to keep up with them. It stops you sort of feeling old. Or sometimes it makes you feel older, I don't know.
Well, certainly there'll never be any shortage of things to do. Let me return to the project, which is headed Andante, which of course means at walking pace, which is rather appropriate for what you're doing. So tell me how you're fundraising on this particular walk.
I've invited all sorts of friends and people to sponsor me as best I can. And then I've got cards that I hand out to people as I go along. I've got some big presence on Facebook. I've got a website, which I put a blog up every night. And we just spread the word as best we can and hope that people will contribute. People can donate online or by text. So we just ask as many people as we can and spread the word as far as we can to say to people, look, this is worth supporting, both for the charities and for the research aspect of it all.
Do you find there's any difficulty, because you come from a specific area, that people have never heard of you, your organisation or what you do, and they feel it might be rather localised, and therefore they're not quite sure whether they should be interested in it or not?
Yeah, it is a problem. The St. Cecilia Orchestra is local, though it does cover pretty well the whole of the north of England. Vacation Chamber Orchestras is international. I mean, we run courses all in this country and all over Europe. So, and the students who play in it come from all over Europe and all over the world. So that's hardly a local thing. But yes, it is a local issue and people haven't heard of us. So it's partly to spread the word about that. But the music education issue, of course, is national, and it's a very big issue at the moment with the government's national plan for music education and music hubs and all the change that's going on at the moment, which we've got to try to make a change for the better. That's not always easy.
Of course, the problem these days with anything is funding. Funding is being cut left, right and centre. Some of the organisations you might have approached for funds have suddenly tightened their purse strings. I mean, what effect is this having on youth training in music?
It's going to be a big problem. I don't think it's really hit yet. The funding for music education, especially where it used to be provided by the county music services, is inevitably being cut. I think that's very, very sad. But we have to live with it. You know, there's nothing we can do about it at the moment, apart from campaign, and we do campaign. But we've got to try and make the best of what's there. And that is really behind this research, as to how we can look at this, the projects and the proposals for the music hubs and the national plan, and see how we can make it improve things, or at least how we can make sure that the things that are important keep going, and if things have got to go, make it the things that are perhaps less important. That's not easy.
And so you're going to be putting together a report on everything you've heard, everything you've seen, on other people's ideas about the youth training schemes today. What do you think the way forward is?
Now, that's a difficult one to put in a nutshell, you know. The one thing I would say is that with almost everybody I've talked to, from top-class professional musicians right down to sort of amateurs and school kids and so on, there's an immense amount of agreement. I mean, we've hardly had actually ended up disagreeing about anything. We sit there and we have a chat about it, and we all think we know what's important. And what we feel is important is that people do it. That's the hub of it all, is that kids have got to play together. Sing together, playing instruments together. Just learning an instrument isn't of any great value to anybody. Just singing isn't it? It's when you sing with other people or play with other people, and when you start to play at a higher standard, you play chamber music, you play in orchestras, that's when the real educational value kicks in. And so these are things we've got to preserve. Personally, I wouldn't mind if GCSE music was abolished completely. But what we mustn't get rid of is all the opportunities for kids to play and to learn and to play together and to learn from playing together, because that's where the educational value lies.
You mentioned the educational value of playing in groups. Is it that people are inspired to a higher level, they hear people of a higher level, they learn from them, and they have an internal desire to achieve?
Yes, it is that. I mean, we've always said that one of the best ways to learn anything musical is to play alongside somebody who's better than you are. And that's always true. And the better the music is, the more you'll learn from it. But we have to look at it the other way as well, is we're not just talking about educating people to be good musicians. Music, along with sport and drama, are the three subjects that are most important in educating, with a capital E, and it doesn't really matter what standard they achieve musically. It's to use music as a medium through which we can educate people. But in the same way, that educational value comes from working with playing with other people. I remember, I think it was Tessa Jowell was quoted in The Guardian after the Olympics, sort of going on about the legacy and how important it was to preserve it. And she said something about, it's so important that we keep these sport in schools to keep these children healthy and to keep them fit. Well, of course, we don't teach sport in schools to keep children fit and healthy. We teach sport in schools because of the educational value that they get out of learning to play in teams and the self-esteem and responsibility and all that sort of thing. Well, music's exactly the same. You know, we don't teach music in order to make people good musicians. We teach the music because they learn so much about life, about everything, about concentration, attention span. You can go on forever about the educational value. They learn that from playing music alongside other people. And, of course, the higher the standard they're playing at, the more they learn and the stronger those elements are.
Well, I know in my own life music is something which is so important I can hardly describe it. It's a friend when you need it. It's something to share. Whatever your feelings are, whatever your state is, you can share it. Yes. Through music, you can express it. Yes. Through music. It is something really, really special and, I suspect, unique to the human race in the way that music is formed and in the way that music is used and listened to. It is something which is a real treasure, and I've known this all my life. So, if you instill in a youngster this feeling of a sense of being the guardian of something which is a treasure, it'll be with them for the rest of their life.
I think you're absolutely right. It is. It's a treasure. It's something that everybody can do. I mean, strangely, even when you're deaf. You know, look at Evelyn Glennie. Blind, it doesn't matter how disabled you are, it doesn't matter what you are, you can do music. It's very difficult to do graphic art if you're blind or something like that. We've seen what you can do with sport if you're disabled. You know, it's amazing what people can do, but music is something that everybody can do and that it can be so meaningful to them. That's perhaps the big point, is that it can mean so much and matter so much to them.
But the key here is letting them realise that they have the ability to do this and that what they can do is music. And there are so many ways you can express yourself. I've been in a number of drumming workshops at festivals and things like that, and you get 20 or 30 people sat round with different instruments, and very soon, after about a minute or a minute and 30 seconds, you begin to get a sense of unity, a sense of rhythm. You begin to develop leaders and followers within the group. You get people who will set a rhythm, you get people who will copy a rhythm. And if you let it run, it'll often run for 20 minutes, 30 minutes at a time.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. It's one of those subjects where you can motivate people. I think music therapy is an area that we often neglect. And again, I don't even think of music therapy as being something different. No. It's just another way of using music as a way of getting to people and motivating people and getting them to experience new things and to work together.
Thinking of the music therapy thing, I've not been particularly well this last year. Music has been very important to me. It's been important to me to get me in the right mindset for things which are going to happen to me. And also for, I don't know, giving me confidence, giving me a sense of security in a very insecure world that I've found myself in over the last sort of 8 or 9 months. It's been, I often say to people, it's been my sanity.
Yeah, and great. I think that's absolutely wonderful that that can happen. And the trouble is that for a lot of people, if they haven't experienced it enough and haven't got to know music enough and been involved in it, they haven't got that to fall back on. They haven't got that experience that's going to keep their spirits high.
Thinking back to giving opportunity to young people, an awful lot of people in these difficult times, they have no resources. Their parents cannot back them financially. How can they actually get up on the first step of learning an instrument and accessing an instrument?
Well, the first thing, of course, is to sing. And singing's the start of the heart. You don't need any money to sing. And perhaps one of the sad things is that there isn't enough singing going on right from the bottom end of primary schools. Now, that's partly a problem of having enough expert teachers who can do it, because it does need to be led with people who know where it's going. You can't just get them to sing. You've got to sing with a purpose. And then our schemes around the government scheme for wider opportunities programme and so on does provide instruments. But it's short-term, it's not particularly well organised yet, it's coming in, and it's not joined up with the singing project. We have two sort of core elements of this new music project. One is what was the Sing Up programme, which is singing for everybody, and one is Wider Opportunities, which is playing instruments for them. But the two are not joined, and really the two should be absolutely fixed together. One of the things that we all look at with amazement is what's been happening in Venezuela and the Simon Bolivar Orchestra and how phenomenal they are, and the whole El Sistema project, which is quite stunning. And it's being rolled out in a few sort of pilot schemes in this country, in Liverpool and in Scotland, one or two others. And it's producing very good results. But one of the sort of foundations of the whole El Sistema project is that they start to learn instruments and sing at the same time. In other words, they have things like a paper orchestra where they can't afford the instruments, but they make them out of cardboard or whatever. But then they learn songs and they sing while they're playing the instruments, so that when they actually get an instrument, they actually know what to do, because they've been singing and they've learned to read music and they can sing together and so on. So the whole thing is joined up. We haven't quite sussed that yet in this country.
Well, looking at the Venezuelan experiment, I mean, the conductor is Gustavo Dudamel, and he himself is a remarkable personality. How much does that experiment depend on his personality? Because now he's moving on to international orchestras.
Well, he's just a product of it. I mean, he didn't found it. He's one of the sort of star products of it. But if you look at the videos and the documentaries on it, the teachers are extremely well taught. The philosophy of the whole project is worked out. And yes, in that case, it's political and it's almost social engineering through music. Well, perhaps we don't want to be going that way in this country. A little bit of it, yeah. But it's also educational, and it's the educational side of it that creates the possibility of the social engineering. Now, we need the educational bit to work maybe in a slightly different way in this country, but it will only work if you have that ethos and that philosophy behind it all, which is aiming, right from the start, is aiming for the highest possible standards. And because the more you aim for high standards, the more you achieve from the educational point of view. And of course, the other thing that people forget about all art is that art, the only way you can possibly define anything to do with art is that it's essentially about quality. The better it is, the more valuable it is. That's what it's about.
Well, the thing that comes across so much from the Venezuelan orchestra is the sheer vivacity of the performance. I've got on a video at home a piece, I can't remember the composer, it's called Danzon, and it is the most remarkable piece of playing, and you just want to stand up from your chair at the end of it and jump up and down and applaud. Yep. And that's the effect they have. And to get that degree of enthusiasm in a group of musicians is something really special. Do you think we can achieve the same sort of levels of enthusiasm here?
I think, yes, I don't think it's quite the same, because we're not going to have all these children coming from that sort of background. And so, yes, you can understand why there will be a bit more enthusiasm there in that way. But the deep down, the sincere enthusiasm for what they're doing, that's not necessarily about standing up in your chair and waving an instrument out of your head. It's to do with the satisfaction that comes from playing at that standard. And I think that they achieve that with Knobs On.
Can I come back now to the West Country? Now, do you have any particular links with schemes in the West Country at the moment?
No, not yet. I went down to see some people in Exeter. I went down to the Exeter Music Group, which is the big amateur orchestra in Exeter, because they'd responded to my email. And also, one of the members of Vacation Chamber Orchestras is an ex-member of the Exeter Music Group, and she'd been chipping them up. So I went to see them and had a long chat with them and went for a drink afterwards. And strangely enough, another person I saw in the orchestra came and said, "What are you doing here, Zen?" There's a violinist who used to be in my youth orchestra in Stockport, who now lives down there. And, oddly enough, works for the Arts Council, so she'll get a copy of my report. So I've met them, and I've got one or two other people, the Southwest Music School, and some people in the Penzance Youth String Orchestra, Tim Bolt, and a few people have contacted me, so I've got sort of ins in various places, and I should be following this up. But other than that, I just want people to get in touch with me and tell me if anything's going on, and tell me if they're interested and involved in music, and if they can walk with me or meet me on the walk or meet me in the evenings, that would be great. I'd just love to talk to them and find out what they think. But I don't know much about what's happening down here, obviously coming from up north in Yorkshire.
The report that you write at the end of meeting all these people, on whom will it have any influence?
It'll be going to all the departments of government that are involved with it. So, you know, with the arts, culture, education, the Arts Council, obviously. I'll send it through whatever organisations that I can, you know, that I've gotten into. So there are various federations and associations to do with music and music education. So I shall certainly send it to them, and probably to as many of the music hubs as I possibly can. I'll publish it on the interweb as well, so it'll be there for people to read if they see it, and hopefully it'll get some readership. But I'm hoping it will have a slight influence on government. I really do.
You've already mentioned that you've got strong thoughts yourself on the way things that ought to go. I mean, what would you like to happen in the future?
We'd all love to have more money, but then I think everybody in the country would love to have more money. I think we need to spend the money slightly more wisely. But I also think we're still not thinking outside the box, not just about music education, but about education as a whole. We need to get out of this idea that school starts at 9 a.m. and finishes at 3:30, and get out of away from the idea that it only takes place in one building, and that it's got holidays and all this sort of thing. And, you know, we need to start thinking again about the way we do this whole business of educating people, and stop thinking of it as just a sort of rigid process. Why do we always educate every child at the same age? If you understand, they go through their education, the whole system, everything that they do, They all do it at the same age. Why? It's an absolute nonsense. Why can't they all do it at the same standard? Or at least all the people that are at a particular level in a particular area of any particular subject do that together. Why do we have to always teach people in a class? Why couldn't we, for instance, if we're doing geography, maybe once a term we get a visiting lecturer to come in and give a lecture on some aspect of geography and the whole school can go to it? You know, we don't have to do everything in these rigid ways. We're still sort of trying to drag schools out of the 19th century, never mind the 20th century, as far as this sort of structure of the education process is concerned. And I think we need to get beyond that and start to think out of the box. I don't know if you've heard of a guy called Sir Kenneth Robinson, who was a sort of guru for the government a long time ago, and then I think they sacked him because they didn't like what he said. But again, he's done three wonderful speeches about are we educating creativity out of our children? And I can't remember what the other ones are called, but he's still saying we're still educating children for the Industrial Revolution. We have to start to think again, think of something new, think of something different, and be more flexible, be much more flexible about the way we do this sort of thing.
What I do think is that we're educating initiative out of people. We are telling people you can't do that, there are risks, we have people in place to cope with the risks for you, to protect you, to do this. And people are not in the same mindset now. They're not prepared to take the element of risk that they did. And I'm sure this applies both in the education system as well in everyday life.
It does, and it applies so much in music. You know, you cannot go through life musically if you're frightened of being wrong. You know, you have to experiment. You have to try it. You have to give it a go. And if it doesn't work, then you try something else. But there is no way of telling somebody that is how you do it. And again, it's one of the premises of teaching children to play an instrument. Basically, you can't teach anyone to play an instrument. All you can do is tell them what not to do and tell them how to practice and leave it to them, and they'll find out. But they can't find out if they don't listen to other people doing it. And if they don't work alongside other people, because that's where you learn from people. So it's all this communication and understanding and listening and looking at the bigger picture, not just being taught in a sort of one-to-one or in a group of four or in a group of 20 for 15 minutes or 20 minutes or an hour. That's not enough. It's when you get beyond that that things start to happen.
Well, it's really got to be an integral part of your life and of living.
Oh, absolutely. But then it is, isn't it?
Well, it is for me, and it is for you.
Well, it should be for everybody. And if it isn't, they better come and talk to me. I'll sort them out.
Well, I was brought up in the days when we had music and movement at schools, where we would sit in front of our radio loudspeaker, and we would all be the usual trees or aardvarks or whatever it was. Yeah. And I used to enjoy that sort of thing, and this sort of group music dynamic used to work very well, even though we didn't actually realise what it was doing for us at the time.
Of course, one of the problems nowadays is we have wall-to-wall music. You know, everywhere you go, you have the Muzak, you know, the restaurant, you have in the supermarkets, you have all this sort of stuff. And it does degrade it. You know, it does mean that people think of Muzak or music as just being wallpaper. And it's quite an interesting one. If you try to talk to a class of school children, especially younger school children, about music and try to interest them in music, and you say to them, as some people do, well, what sort of music do you enjoy? What would you like to listen to? And they'll tell you some pop song that they all want to listen to, and you put it on the radio, and within 30 seconds they're not listening, they're just talking to each other. They don't want to listen to it. Now, we've got to get past that. We've got to find a way of showing people and demonstrating to people that there is more to it than just having a noise going on in the background. And the way to do that is to get them doing it. That's the only way. We can't do it by telling them. We've got to get them doing it, and doing it at a decent level so they understand it.
Well, there's so much, I'm going to say, so-called music around at the moment. People become conditioned. They no longer question, they no longer seek, they no longer ask. Yeah. And they're not actually aware of whether it's good music, bad music, or what it is. So you've got to somehow instill some sort of understanding of what quality is. We're back to the word quality again.
Yeah. Which is, yes, as I said, which is what an art is. Any art is all about quality. But isn't this something that's happening in life anyway? We just have information thrown at us everywhere. You can't get away from it. And on the television, it's not just the music, it's everything is thrown at you. Everything you want is so easily accessible, so nobody has to think. But, oh, yes, you do have to think. You know, if you actually want to get anywhere and do anything and achieve anything, or if you want to have a better quality of life, you've got to start thinking about it, not just sort of accepting everything that everybody tells you. We have to compete, sadly, with sort of media advertising of things that are commercial things that are just there to make a profit, and the best way to make a profit is to exploit the ignorance of the people. And so, you know, everybody's trying to persuade people to buy things that they don't want or to do things that they don't need to do, because that's how you're going to get money out of it. And everything is dumbed down, and we have to get beyond that. We have to start thinking and start, not, I don't know, what is the opposite of dumbed down? Can't be dumbed up. But we have to find that. We have to find that opposite and do it.
I think it's partly the fault of the general public in accepting such low standards, not questioning, not asking. As with so many things, as with manufactured products, if more people said, hey, this is substandard, you know, this is no good, we want something better than this, we want something which is better designed, works better, the quality aspect comes into that. If people were aware of this and realised that they could actually get it and didn't have to put up with what we were offered, then things would change, or could change, very slowly.
But isn't that back to education again? I can remember in my first, one of my first physics lessons at secondary school, and the teachers, first of all, saying, we were talking about detergents, I think, and he was saying, you know, the detergents don't need bubbles in them. So they only put bubbles in because the housewife thinks it's not going to clean the dishes if it doesn't have bubbles in it. And he went on, and we spent half the lesson talking about advertising, and basically the lesson at the end of the day was, don't believe anything you hear. When you see an advert, take no notice of it whatsoever, find out for yourself, think about it, work it out, and get the best product.
Which takes me very neatly back to your musical philosophy. Find out for yourself, take part, do it, get into an opportunity where you can have a go at an instrument, and you might well discover that there's something there you never even dreamed that you could do.
Absolutely. And most of all, just listen to other people who, you know, especially, of course, people who are better than you, which won't be difficult to find them if you're learning, if you're in the early stages of learning. But listen to musicians, listen to live music, and just sort of open the mind to what it can do and get involved with it.
Zen Kelsey, thank you very much indeed for talking to Ten Radio. I hope your trip down to Land's End goes with not too many problems for you, and I'm sure you'll be meeting lots of interesting people along the way. Thank you.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure. Thank you.